Hello, motion picture brains. That's you. Fans of light, darkness, composition, celluloid, zeros, and ones. Welcome to the first ever episode of Through the Lens podcast, the unedited audio of our full conversation with one of the world's most dynamic cinematographers. In this episode, we spoke with the wonderful and fabulous André Parrick, known for, amongst other things, the films of Half Nelson, Blue Valentine, Sugar, and Cold Souls. What follows is the uncut audio of my conversation with André. We met in New York City at the offices of Handheld Films in October of 2012. Shout out to the folks at Handheld! How you doing? If you want to check out the Hollywood video version of this interview, you will find it at crafttrek.com as Season 1, Episode 1 of Through the Lens, or youtube.com/crafttrek. You can also subscribe if you're feeling dangerous. It should be noted that during this interview, André chose scotch over wine, and that makes him a badass.
I have to leave you guys at 4:15, just to... If that's okay.
4:15?
5:15.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
That's totally perfect. Fine. We'll get straight to the meat of it.
Let's bang it through.
Bang it through. Get right out. Well, okay, so are we rolling? Oh, are we good? Okay.
We have been for a while.
See, he's aware of it. Yeah, but that's because...
That's where the Bond villain comes in.
Yeah.
We have been.
We have been rolling for a while, Mr. Bond. In case you wonder why. All my cameras are rolling all the time. Young cinematographers in the world, when you look at what was happening with films in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. when the film world changed, and filmmakers like John Cassavetes brought in the style of letting different types of performances happen that were less, more free. An emergence of filmmakers came out at that time. I don't think any cinematographer working today is carrying that torch as much as André Parrick. Welcome to Krafttrek. Welcome to Through the Lens. Nobody is carrying that torch like you. As I was mentioning before, we were just talking. I saw your reel when you were just shooting shorts.
When I was a child.
When you were 12 years old, you were but a babe in the woods. And it was mind-blowing because immediately every image was completely striking and beautiful. And you know, when you only really see these things when you line it up against a bunch of other cinematographers' reels and one just jumps out at you. But since that time, you have gone on to prove that this was all true. You've lensed some absolutely brilliant features, and you've been seemingly seeking out dramas.
Yes. I don't think comedy is very funny.
Pardon me?
I don't think comedy is very funny.
you just don't.
It's a category.
I just don't. You should, Mr. Glickman, I don't like to laugh.
Yeah.
But also, I also want to talk about, even though it is a drama, but it's kind of a semi-sports, but Sugar, also a stunningly beautiful picture.
Yeah, I'm not a baseball fan, and I was very afraid of the baseball while shooting that movie.
So what, are you literally afraid of?
I was very afraid of getting hit by the baseball all the time.
Well, how close was the camera? Did you put the camera right in the line?
The first assistant got hit a couple of times.
Are you serious? Yeah, that much?
Put it that way.
Was the actual actor?
That's where they have first assistants, actually, to get hit by the ball.
Just to make sure. Yeah. But couldn't you build some kind of glass?
We tried it. It became really cumbersome. And it was just like we couldn't possibly shoot that. I mean, you know, you can't possibly have freedom in a glass box.
Right. Not going to happen.
So that's why they have first assistants.
To get hit by baseball.
Yeah, because they're like a little bit closer to the baseball than you are.
And you're just like kind of operating from behind.
Yeah, from behind them.
Yeah. Now, you operate everything you shoot so far?
I try to.
So you prefer to?
I prefer to operate.
Why don't we start with Sugar? Just because...
Let's start with Sugar.
Now, on the behind the scenes, first of all, you managed to do something in the film which is very tough to do, I think, from what little knowledge of photography that I have, which is that you made it both very, very real, and that every natural lighting situation, but it was so rich. The skin tones of our actor, the main characters, the colors of the spaces were just jumping out. And you had, if I'm not mistaken, you had three color palettes for it.
We had three color palettes for Dominican Republic, for just sort of like It was basically like Dominican Republic and the U.S.
Right.
We're supposed to be two different color palettes. One was much more green-blue, which was Dominican Republic.
Right.
And we shot Fujifilm. And then the U.S. was supposed to be a little bit more vibrant with reds and yellows, and we shot Kodak. That movie was a crazy challenge because we were shooting in Dominican Republic in the middle of summer, and the sun would be at 6 a.m. the sun would be like go up like this, and then suddenly it'd skyrocket into the sky, and you had like the worst lighting conditions for black faces you could possibly imagine.
Right.
Which is like
just
overhead top light with baseball caps.
And I forgot about the baseball caps.
Baseball caps.
Yeah, so like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was just like.
So what did you do? Did you just get a lot of reflectors?
And we had a huge amount of bed sheets probably stolen from our hotel that we would just put all over the baseball field. And the production designer, I had her sew in white under the bills with a baseball cap to sort of passively bounce back the bounce that we were creating from the sun.
And did that actually help? It actually helped to light the eyes a bit?
I mean, I hope so. Otherwise, the production designer's work was, or the costume designer's work was, has gone to waste. But yeah, and her time. No, yeah, I think it worked.
Right.
What else? I don't know. Yeah, that movie was, you know, that was a great challenge. We shot, there was like an odyssey just shooting that movie. I mean, Dominican Republic, Iowa, Arizona, New York.
Now let's take that was a day exterior. What about a night interior? A night. I mean, were you always cognizant of trying to like? And when he goes to the U.S., he's roomed with this white family,
right?
So is that a challenge when you have a very very black? And he's a black actor.
He's quite dark.
Is that a huge challenge?
I mean, it was always, you know, a bit of a challenge. I think modern film stocks kind of helped the problem a little bit. I think it was a little bit less. It was less of a problem than I thought it was going to be. But we ended up, you know, having to fill him in up quite a bit and light him up quite a bit. I mean, it was tough. But I don't know. I try not to think about those kind of things when shooting the movie. You know, like, I try to think about it ahead of time and then, like, try to do all the work. Prepare the directors for, like, making the whole baseball field white and then suddenly realizing you don't have to and pulling that away. They were also, Ryan and Anna like to have a very free moving set and very fast moving set.
Right.
And, I would attribute probably my style of, you know, lighting spaces and then speed with their desire. Like they sort of helped me develop that style in many ways.
Even before you made Half Nelson?
I think so.
I mean, so you were
working I wasn't working with them before, but they, you know, that Half Nelson was sort of the sparkling twinkle in the eye of that style,
right?
You know,
we'll get to Half Nelson in a second because there's so much to talk about with that film. We're talking about a modern day masterpiece that sort of jumps off the screen. With Sugar, I mean, aside from the color palettes, and I mean, how did you? The vibrancy, was it just a question of de-eyeing it, or was it just how I don't know, the way I see it is both natural and incredibly colorful and contrasting.
I don't know, I mean, it's just it seemed appropriate for the movie, and
right,
you know, it's a, we wanted to saturate the states, and the Dominican Republic was naturally just saturated with blue and green. So it wasn't, I mean, we didn't have to do that much work, you know. Production design was very instrumental and helpful in kind of, you know, involving the production designer early on in the visual design of the movie is really important. Mm-hmm. Production designers would probably say, like, involving the DP early on is very important too, so, you know.
Yeah. Of course.
But, you know, I can't take credit for everything in that movie.
Is there any particular moments or sequences or even just individual shots you're particularly fond of in the movie?
There's a wonderful moment where he runs down this jetty and the camera's handheld just chasing after him.
Right. I remember that.
Which I really like. The thing about, you know, thing about working with Ryan and Anna is like they're willing to try anything with the camera, and we're rarely on a tripod, you know. So I mean, we were on a tripod for a lot of the baseball stuff because we're, you know, at 800 millimeter and kind of shooting like classical sports photography. You know, the thing is, I'm a bit of a sports fan, but I haven't had a like functioning television in 20 years, so I'm not really. I don't really watch like TV or watch, you right. know, watch sports. I'm not really.
So when you go to see a movie, you strictly go to the cinema.
We have a DVD player that's connected to the television, but it's right. not. There's
no cable.
There's no reception.
Right.
Basically, you know, I grew up with a 13-inch black and white television until I was, I think, 15 or 16, and then there was the color TV was unveiled during for a Bond movie.
Right,
because my dad was a great fond of, like he was very fond of Bond.
I'm telling you, I'm going to get you on as the villain in a Bond 25. Maybe we'll give it two more, and then
yeah, we'll give him a call.
Yeah, we'll give him a call. Have you seen the cinematographer? This guy is evil.
perfectly
evil. So that shot with the jetty. So how did you get you operated the shot?
I operated. We just chased the actor, and you know he just jumped into the water and. You know, but it's that kind of freedom, like that the camera can do anything.
Yeah.
With Ryan and Anna, that's really nice, and it doesn't have to. It's never expensive. You know, someone else would put it on a Technocrane and like 120 feet of dolly.
Right.
You know, and it would have taken like a day and a half to set up.
Right.
And then we just did it in about 7 minutes.
How many days was that film shot in?
It's hard to say because it was shot over. You know, we basically shot over 7 or 8 months. You know, we shot Dominican first, and then they went to Arizona to prep, and then I would arrive a couple of weeks later. You know, they would open the production office and get that all going, and so I think in total it was probably 45 or 50 days, maybe.
Oh, okay. So for an independent,
I mean, there was time.
Yeah,
we did it non-union,
right?
You know,
right.
Which is,
you know, you prefer to work that way, it seems.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, there's certain restrictions, and there's. You know, it's when you're trying to do things cheaply, it's kind of the only way to do things.
Right.
As sort of graduate into bigger movies, like that choice is not available.
Right. Got it. Well, let's before we go into like graduating into bigger movies, because I'm sure there's many around the corner for you, right. Not currently going or whatever, but. Half Nelson. You know, you already made a feature before that. There's a film called Messengers.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first feature. That was actually the first feature I was fired from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess you can go like that now or whatever.
No. I was fired off a job because the actress got pink eye, and after the first week, we were 5 days behind.
But, oh, okay. So, all right. One of those. It happens.
You know, someone has to. I mean, I also, to be honest, didn't really get along with the director, and the script was terrible. But
that's a sign.
That's
a sign. Okay, so you make Messengers, and then actually getting fired, because this is something I've asked. Have you ever been fired off a job to some of the bigger ones? Even though it was those ridiculous situations, you weren't getting along with.
Getting fired was fantastic.
Right.
Getting fired was fantastic because suddenly my name was not on this movie. You understood your vulnerability and you're given a good dose of humility.
Also a very mortal experience getting fired, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had a... If anyone ever asks you for a Sunday sit-down lunch, you know it's coming in the film business.
Right.
Basically. No, I think it was a very healthy, you know... It was, of course, terribly humiliating and humble, you know, like very humbling, but in a lot of ways it was really good because getting my first feature, like that hurdle, I jumped the hurdle and kind of tripped, you know, and then just got back up.
Right.
And, you know, it was a really good experience. It taught me to be very careful about. the movies that I chose and that I choose. Mm-hmm. It made me very aware. Like, I mean, I knew going into it that it was not a good idea. I mean, I had that feeling the whole time, and like, it was very good, like, reconnection with your intuition, basically. Or, you know, when your intuition is telling you something, like, that's when you should probably listen. And, you know, it was important for me to get that job, but then I guess it wasn't that important for me to keep it.
Cheers to that.
You know, so.
There we go. So getting fired.
Yeah. Messengers. Okay, Messengers was like a $300,000 science fiction film.
Right.
That we shot, I think, in 21 days. And it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. Very close to the director still. You know, I mean, unfortunately, the movie didn't really have a space. Didn't really find its space.
Audience.
Yeah, audience or space. Or, you know, cheap science fiction is kind of tough.
You know?
And, but it was, you know, it was a wonderful experience, and you know, you take a lot of lessons that you learn in film school, which is kind of working with what you have, working with what you're given, trying to squeeze, you know, something out of a stone, and trying to, you know, just going for it,
right,
and not really holding back and really giving it everything you have. And hopefully that's something I'm carrying into all my work. But there was that. Then there was this Brazilian movie called Sonhos de Peixe, which I went down to.
That was with your partner?
No, that was with a guy named Kirill Michanowski,
okay,
who was a film school friend of mine, very good friend of mine. And we shot this another, you know, this was a $300,000 movie in Brazil, so it was a different, suddenly there was a lot of money. I mean, there was, you know, there was never enough money, but it was, again, 16mm, all handheld. I love that movie. It's incredibly beautiful. You know, us out on fishing boats and everyone getting seasick. And,
right.
You know, it was, you know, it was the, it was an experience. And there's an Orson Welles movie about that region in Bahia where we shot. And a lot of that sort of documentary feeling is captured in that film. And you know, it's part of the documentary training that we had in film school was I think has been carried on into, you know, that movie and Half Nelson. And I think there's a documentarian in me. I mean, part of it is that I'm really shy and I end up being like the wallflower, so I'm used to watching, you know, from maybe a little bit further away. And
that's interesting you say that. You're a little bit shy.
Yeah.
And so part of you likes to be a little bit further away.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because when I think of your photography, I think of, I mentioned Cassavetes earlier, right. I mentioned the ultimate in putting the camera in the corner and watching the action happen, yeah, in not a voyeuristic way. It's not like, it's not a Hitchcockian,
right,
De Palma voyeuristic way, but more in a fly on the wall,
yeah,
kind of a way, right?
Yeah.
And it's so evident when you watch Half Nelson,
yeah,
that this is the photography of that, you know. Now,
yeah,
obviously, you and the directors worked perfectly together in sync on that movie.
Yeah.
But to name some examples, there's a sequence. There's two sequences in his apartment,
yeah,
in Gosling's apartment. One when he has the girl student over,
right,
to his house and he's chopping,
yeah,
and his nose starts bleeding. And, you know, I don't remember if there are close-ups, if it's wide. I just remember the moment and him.
Right, the nosebleed.
The nosebleed,
yeah,
and the embarrassment in front of the student and this unspoken, she knows, but she doesn't,
right,
really know. And there's just so much spoken in the silence, like so much shown. And then the other sequence is when he brings home random girl to sleep,
right,
with. Next morning, he gets up, and you have the shot of him just kind of sitting on the couch. And now, obviously, it's Ryan Gosling, one of the foremost actors,
right,
of our generation, if not, you know, the...
But, I mean, at that time, he was, you know... It's very interesting seeing Ryan's career sort of explode from that movie,
yeah,
onward. And it has exploded, and you know, he was the same. I mean, the beautiful thing about him is that he was the same way then as he is now.
Right. Just that confident.
Yeah, I mean, there's something in him, you know.
But okay, but in terms of those sequences in your photography, right? Like what? Right. What did, I mean, were you consciously saying, I got to light this in such a way that I can just put the camera anywhere and just shoot, or...
I mean, that's always been the philosophy for my lighting. Has been, you know... I don't know what actors are going to do, ever. And in those kind of movies, and with those types of actors, they oftentimes do whatever they want to do. And like my job, I feel, is like to not get in the way of the performance. You know, that's like the thing that I strive most, is to really let actors play and create a environment and a mood for them, which I think is appropriate to the story, and then sort of let them play within that. And you know, I mean, people, you know, I think it's very natural for people to be dark in certain parts of a room. Like, you know, there's not light everywhere. That's always been like the sort of guiding philosophy behind the work, is lighting spaces, and just let them go and let the actors do their thing. And hopefully, I haven't, you know, I don't like lights on set. Mm-hmm. I don't like the sort of apparatus of filmmaking being anything more than a camera, you know, and the boom pole around, if possible. And so I try to stick to that as much as possible.
So you try and light from outside the room, you try
yeah.
and work, mount things.
Mount things, put in the ceiling, but, you know, I can't imagine being an actor and having all this stuff in your face, you know. So I just try to, you know, try to step away. And
do you find that the actors really appreciate you going, you having that approach?
I mean, I hope so. You know, I don't... I mean, I feel like there's a lot of strong performances in the movies that I've shot. One very sweet thing that Ryan said was that during the shooting of Blue Valentine, like, he never realized where I was. All of the past material shot with a 16 millimeter and a 25 millimeter lens, and so that means like the close up, you know, like I'm right here with him, and you know, the wide shot across the street. But,
we pay extra for that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was, yeah, it was kind of, you know, Ryan mentioned that like he was never really aware of me, and that, you know, in that, for me, like, I've done my job, you know, captured right. a performance. I've not been in the way. You know, I just, and people to go to movies to go see great performance is not nice photography, I think. And so I'm, you know, I feel like it's my job to sort of
step back
a little bit.
So one more sequence to ask you about, it's actually two in one, when there's a school dance.
Yeah.
And Ryan does this wonderful sort of jokey,
yeah,
I'm dancing up, and then he dances with the student, which yeah. in a way,
borderline, totally inappropriate. Yeah,
borderline, I mean, totally inappropriate. But that with, again, everyone in the audience thought the same thing, which is, you know, this is borderline inappropriate. We know he's a good guy, yeah. And you know, and then there's this Herculean battle outside.
Yeah, with Anthony Mackie.
With Anthony
yeah.
Mackie, also,
yeah,
one of the great,
yeah, amazing,
great talents amazing. Of our generation, and this. Young woman, to yeah. try, you know, and you know it's in, you know, I think he's in a white suit, if I'm not mistaken, or I think what?
Mackie, I don't remember him being in a white suit, I think.
But it's just between God and yeah. the devil. It's yeah. not even God, it's just, I'm exaggerating, but it's between these two poles. And it sort of looked like the whole thing was just one hard...
Yeah, it's one source.
Yeah. Is that all?
Yeah, I think it was a single source, and there was, you know, maybe a bounce card. But again, it's like I spent time with Harris Savides on the Yards, who just passed away.
We were going to talk about him a bit, yeah.
And the best lesson I learned from him was lighting simply. You know, I mean, I think there's two very important gifts that a cinematographer, or maybe tools, I should say. Mm-hmm. One is where to place the light. The second is where to place the camera. And the two have to act in tandem. And for single, you know, if you're trying to go for single source lighting, you know, it's, there's times where you light that way and then you're like, because suddenly the person's not lit or has gone out of the light. But I also find that, you know, actors are sort of like plants and they kind of know where
to go to the light, find their light.
They know where the light is.
The actors are kind of like plants. We just blew open the whole Hitchcock comparison. Actors are like cattle. Actors like plants.
Well, you know, for cinematographers, I would say they're highly photosynthetic beings.
Yes, they find their light. Yeah. So when you're on set shooting this, when you're looking through the eyepiece, did it just feel like you were capturing like a?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. Those two guys were like, I mean, they were actually kind of, and the beautiful thing was like, they didn't get along, you know, off the set.
Really?
And it was, you know.
It came across.
I mean, it was, you know, it's two peacocks, like, you know, they're going to fight. And,
well, they should work together again.
I mean, they're incredible together.
Yeah.
I think they actually did. I just saw a trailer for this movie that they're both in some kind of like 20s gangster LA movie.
Oh, yes. The new one with the Tommy guns.
A lot of Tommy guns.
That's what you remember when you watch a trailer. Right?
Tommy guns.
Yeah. No, it's about like this squad that they put together, a cop squad.
Kind of I think it's called a gangster squad.
Gangster squad, right. Yeah. That does look fantastic.
I just saw Argo this morning, which was really
good. You did?
Yeah.
How was it?
Very nice.
My friend Scoot is in that. He plays the mustache. Yeah,
he's very good.
Yeah, he is a good actor. He's an amazing actor.
Yeah,
he's got. But he actually, you and him as a photography actor match would be like magic because he loves. He got known for being the guy to improv because he was in In Search of a Midnight Kiss, which was a lot of improv, and so then he got. So most recently, he was in a Lynn Shelton movie.
Cool.
Who was, you know, is
yeah.
I don't know if you her pictures. Actually, I'm surprised you haven't worked with Lynn Shelton. Yeah, that'd be a good match. Anyway,
there's plenty of time.
Plenty of time. So you make Half Nelson, and then there's other pictures in between. But we have to talk about Blue Valentine because as monstrous of a actor's movie, Half Nelson is, Blue Valentine almost goes further. I think. Gosling himself had a quote about it where he said, you know, in most movies there's no hint that you gotta search for a hint of reality.
Yeah.
And in this movie you're just swimming in it. You're just dripping in it. The portrait of a couple that's at the end of their... Both the beginning of their relationship is flashback to, but the portrait of a couple at the end of their career as a couple, at the end of their relationship. At the final stages of it breaking down and crashing. You know, the whole thing just felt like it was almost you couldn't get away from it. You're in the audience, you wanted to get away from watching this go wrong.
The doors are locked, sorry.
Yeah, the doors are locked and you're locked. So, I mean... On average, how far back from the actors were you in this movie? Because, I mean, when I think about, like, seeing him drive around in the van and then watching them in the... I mean, the closest I think you get is, like, you know, if you could have cut a hole into the next hotel room over when they were in the blue sci-fi, the blue room, you felt like you could have gone that much further, you know?
You know, that movie... I'll give you a little history on that movie. That movie, I got a call from Derek... probably 5 years before shooting it, and he had this movie called Blue Valentine, and he was shooting commercials at the time.
Right.
So he hired me on a commercial, and we started talking about the movie, and it was going to happen like next spring.
Right.
And it was suddenly 6 springs later that it actually happened.
Really?
So we spent a lot of time together shooting commercials.
This was his script?
This was, yeah. and it took him 11 years to make this movie. Like, you know, actors were available, money was available, actors weren't, just kind of
constant rotating.
Terrible. I can't imagine what it was like to try to get that movie made. But then got a call and it was greenlit, and he was like, how do you feel about making this movie with no lights? And I was like, well, how about one light? And that was kind of, that was our negotiation, was one light. So,
wait, are you being literal?
Literally.
No lights.
He wanted to have no lights. I wanted to have one light.
What was the one light?
So we had a 6K, like, you know, just some big source.
And like when you said, like, not even like a Tweety, like we have up
there. No, it was a big source of, you know.
But none of those, no Kinos, no?
No.
You drove around with a camera and a truck and one light.
We had the crew van, the crew trucks. The trucking was grip, electric, camera, sound. It was like every department was on the same truck.
One truck.
There was no gear. It was one truck. And, you know, the pass was all this, was 16 millimeter with a 25 millimeter, like the sort of normal, you know, your normal eye perspective. So I was actually quite close to those guys in the past material. The wedding, you know, it's when I'm shooting a close-up, I'm probably 3 feet away.
Because you like that wider.
We just decided we were gonna shoot, you know, we made like rules for ourselves. One was one light, one was that the pass would be only on a 25 millimeter lens.
The past.
And then
everything in the past, all the flashbacks.
The beginning of the relationship, all that.
Right, okay, so everything, every time when he's doing that sequence and he's adjusting the guy's room, old age home, and they meet. Any particular reason why you needed the past to be...
I mean, we just want to differentiate between the past and the present.
But instead of using a technique like blowing out the colors or desaturating or black and white, you use the lens choice.
It was
the
lens choice.
That's brilliant, because I've never heard that.
And it was a, you know... And the present was all shot on red, and with basically the lenses were, most of it was on this Ingenue lens, like it was zoomed 250 millimeters. So all the present stuff is incredibly zoomed in. You know, we are 30 feet away from actors for a close-up.
Right.
You know, like the camera is not part of their world at all.
Where did you shoot that hotel scene?
That's in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. In a themed hotel. Actually, there's like a...
And that room came as dressed.
That room was fairly close to what it... I mean, the bones are all there. The production designer did a bit of work. I went there with the gaffer and spent 4 days basically lighting the whole space so that we wouldn't have to touch lights.
So you for just change bulbs.
There's like, there's, you know, the sort of spaceship windows are where our lighting source is from. But I basically went in there for 4 days and we basically lit this whole space knowing that we would never have a chance to touch lights during shooting.
Sure. How many days did you shoot in there? I mean, when I think about that, they get to the room.
It's fine. We shot, I think, 4 or 5 days in that space, which was basically like going to Vegas because you had no sense of like, I mean, we were doing 45-minute takes. You know, it was just...
Let it roll.
It was just let it roll. And there was two cameras. You know, kind of... The idea was that for the present, there would be these kind of two roving eyes that would just watch the actors and...
Kind of like Altman a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that was the approach. And, it's really nice when you have limitations because it sort of allows you a huge amount of freedom, I find. You know, I mean, it was like you forget about the gear stuff. Like it's not important. You know, what's important is like the material in front of the camera. And you know, the experience was really incredible. Very harrowing, I think, just because they sort of were in this honeymoon and the past material, and in the present they were really like, Michelle was very sort of masterful in being
just a woman done with not knowing how to end this and done.
But it was, you know, it transcended the set. You know,
you felt it.
Yeah. And Ryan would go home upset every night, you know, after shooting.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they were in it. They were, like, fully in it when we were shooting. And I think it shows.
Oh, it, you know, it leaps. Like, it's the most...
It's like this very Cassavetes. It wasn't actors acting. It was actors being in front of the camera. And at that point, you just hope not to fuck up, you know?
Right. So... When, you know, back to that one bedroom, I get the reason why it rings up, maybe it's because the name of the film is Blue Valentine and it was a blue room. Maybe it's because, you know, a large portion of the movie sort of turns and arcs in there. But, I mean, first of all, we've spoken with other photographers whose big deal is blocking. They want to help the visual blocking. What you're saying is a completely different approach, where you're saying, "I'll set up and just follow you guys where you go." Yeah. Is that, was there any discussion about the blocking? Was it scene by scene, or was it just they would just go be?
I try to sort of influence where things take place, and of course, we didn't block this movie. We didn't block Blue Mountain.
At all. Okay.
Blue Mountain was just shot.
It was shot.
it was not blocked. It was just shot. You know, we would go. Actors would arrive on set, we're going straight to picture. Like, okay.
So you'd give them a space in which to play, and that was it. And was the dialogue adhered to as it was in the script, or was it more like just whatever they felt?
I think a lot of it, you know, there was a bit of it that was improv, that was situations that they're trying to stick to, but, you know, in other movies, blocking is very important to me. Only because you hope to know what's going on, or just makes it a little bit easier.
Right. I'd like to know what's going on now, because I gotta operate the camera. Okay, so.
But you know, then you at that point, like you just rely on your sort of instincts, and you know, it's like those things.
How much stuff happened in that room that didn't end up in the final cut that you just thought? Was, you know, you were swimming in material that could have been made, you know, an entire other movie, or...
I feel like everything, you know, that's working is in the movie.
Right. Interesting. That's just very interesting.
Like, I don't... Yeah, definitely everything that was working, that you know, Derek came in, I think, with an extremely long cut in the beginning, but everything it's been very well refined, and you know, he had the opportunity to, because it went to Cannes and then went to Sundance, he had the opportunity to sort of shape it a couple of times. You know, he went back to the edit room, and you know, I really respect his process. Like, it's, you know, he allows the material to breathe. He spends so much time in the edit, probably because there's so much material,
right?
You know, but
it was a masterful achievement. It was filmmaking that was so focused,
yeah,
and clear.
I mean, that's, you know, to Derek's credit, like he brings a great deal of focus and humanity to a movie,
right?
You know, you just watch him day to day interactions with anyone on the street. He is very present. He's very present. In the way that he is with people, and I think it comes across. You know, people trust him tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those actors definitely did.
Well, that's, well, it, you know, it's something you can, you know, upon retirement, whenever that mystical day happens, you know, or it never does. Yeah.
Hopefully.
You know, you can always look back at that. We have to wrap up because you have to get out of here. But I just want to run some names by you, get your thoughts on them. You can give me a minute about them or whatever. Because one of the things we're going to do later is, instead of doing Andriy Peric interview, we're going to do, you know, Andriy as told by 20 other guys.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, but we're not doing this for everyone.
I hate to see that.
So don't worry about that. Because,
can I suggest the guys?
Yeah. Well, Harris Savides.
an incredibly beautiful soul, a great teacher, a beautiful man, a master at what he did, like the perfect craftsman that knew all of his tools inside and out.
Favorite picture of his?
I don't know.
Too bad at a name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Willis.
Gordon Willis. You know, between making Woody Allen's movies look incredible and also his work in The Godfather, you know, it probably turned cinematography on its head a little bit in terms of the, like, crossing genres, you know, making dramas look like horror films and bringing horror to drama.
And Roger Deakins.
Deakins. What to say about Deakins? I really respect the fact that he doesn't shoot commercials.
I hear you.
You know, he's been, like, at the side of some of the, you know, the biggest directors of the last two decades.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met him, so it's, I mean, it's hard, you know, I've never met Gordon Willis, but it's hard for me to talk about. I mean, I know his work, but, you know, it doesn't...
I think what's interesting is that with... what you're saying is, for you, the person is actually tells you more about the work than the work tells you about the person. And that speaks to you. Because now that I've met you in more detail, I think I feel like I understand your work a little bit. There's so much more we could have talked about Cold Souls. What do you have coming up now?
Sophia and I are supposed to... We're going to be doing an English language adaptation of Madame Bovary.
Oh, wow.
Which is exciting.
That's tremendously exciting.
And tremendously terrifying.
Yeah.
I've had a few interviews for some interesting, you know, I don't want to talk about them yet because there's nothing, there's no cat in the bag yet. So.
Well, we're looking forward to it.
But there's a movie called Greetings from Tim Buckley, which we shot last year that just premiered at Toronto, which I think is going to be very, well, hopefully do very well. About Tim Buckley and Jeff Buckley.
Fantastic. Well, when we have you back for our next round, we'll be talking about that. We'll talk about Cold Souls, a bunch of other things. Andre Peric, thanks so much for coming here. Watch the future career of Andre Peric because he is one of the most tremendous talents in the business currently working.
Is it time for my pirouette?
Yeah, oh yeah. Just do his little circle.